Good evening, everybody. Hope you're all doing well. Welcome back to another episode of Blockchain and Beyond. As always, I'm your host, Razan. On today's episode, we've got another guest with me. This guest is from the D13 Collective, who is a group developing on Algorand. So I would like everybody to meet Bit.
Hello, everybody. Like Farzan said, I'm Bit from the D13 Collective. We've been pretty much infatuated with Algorand since about December of 21. And we've been quietly building some stuff as well as some data reports on the Algorand ecosystem and around Algorand in general.
Cool. Yeah, no. So, I mean, I've looked at some of the stuff you're working on. It seems pretty cool. But what kind of got you to this place, right? You mentioned, you know, you got into Algorand in 2021. What were you or, you know, you and your partners doing before that? What kind of led you down this road?
So the D13 Collective is not really like a DAO or anything like that. It's more of some real life friends that have been hearing me talk about Bitcoin since about 2011 or so. I kind of slept on crypto for the past 3 years until autumn of 21, where I came back and I kind of looked at the entire DeFi explosion and I was like, wow, this is really something. And I held some Bitcoin for quite a long time. I mined BTC using some GPUs back in 2011 and 2012, and some loose change that was kind of left over from those operations has ended up being, you know, somewhat significant. And so I looked into the space and I diversified some of my BTC holdings into some promising L1s. And when I started reading about Algorand, it really caught my eye. Obviously, Silvio Micali, being the founder and the lead designer of it, leads it a lot of credence just without even going into specifics. But I'd say the fundamentals and the user experience are what really sold it to ourselves. And it's somewhat interesting to note that I've been in the crypto space as a user and a miner, I guess that's a kind of user too, for well over 10 years now. And nothing really drew my interest enough to say, wow, this is going to be big. This is worth like my time, right? Because I'm a firm believer that time is the ultimate currency. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the combination of the fundamentals and the team and especially the user experience is what really sold us on Algorand. Like the 4.5 second finality that we have right now is just crazy. And if you combine that with fees that are below a single cent, and then you compare that to stuff like Ethereum, it's not even ETH 2.0. It's competitive with ETH 3.0. I was recently had to move some stuff into Ethereum and I wanted to do like a single curve deposit. And it was like $130 in today's ETH fees. With Ether being at like 1,000 USD. That's just crazy. It drives you back into Algorand with 0.001 algo per transaction like that.
Yeah, no, I totally resonate with that. Because I remember one time I accidentally withdrew some tokens onto Ethereum rather than, I think, like Polygon or whatever I was using at the time. And, you know, to send it back, it was costing me like $8 or $16 in gas fees. And I'm just like, this is way too much. There's no way that this is affordable for everyone. And this was, you know, just a simple transaction, not even interacting with any like smart contracts or, you know, on Curve or anything like that. So I was like, for me personally, this isn't something that I can sustain, right? Because, you know, crypto isn't my life. I don't have, you know, millions of pounds or dollars that I can put into crypto. So, you know, these gas fees are just kind of insane. And then you see Algorand and it's like 0.0001 and you're like, this is literally so affordable that you don't even feel it when, you know, you're making a transaction.
Right.
Sometimes you see, you know, you're making 15 application calls in within a batch of transactions, and you don't even blink twice about it. You basically just hit sign and you're off with it, you know.
But you're probably talking about Algo5 here, I'd guess. And this is currently it's a restriction of AVM, where each transaction is guaranteed a certain amount of computing time. And if a contract is expensive enough, then you have to have a bunch of dummy transactions just to get into to get the compute quota needed to process it. And this is actually going away with AVM 1.1, if I'm not mistaken. You'll be able to have a single transaction and I believe pay a bit more in transaction fees, and that's going to translate into the compute quota that you need. But yeah, it's not even just that. I mean, if you're using Ethereum with just a normal everyday person budget and you get surprised by stuff and not in a pleasant way, like in Ethereum, you can get like a transaction stuck. If you have a pending transaction, you cannot send another. It has to either be processed or you have to clear it. And to clear a transaction, you have to pay gas, extra gas, to get it canceled. At least you can replace by fee, where you can spend more gas on a transaction to get it prioritized. But yeah, and also you pay gas for transactions that fail as well, which I kind of understand from a technical perspective, but it's still just not a great experience. And a common criticism of Algorand is like, oh, nobody's using it. Well, actually, if you look at the chain, it usually does a lot more transactions than Ethereum on a single day. So I'm not, sure that no one's actually using it, and that's why it's so performant. And recently, Algorand recently celebrated 3 years of mainnet. We actually built a small birthday site and celebration on isitalgrandsbirthday.com. And for this, and just in general, we wanted to take a look at the reliability claims that Algorand and the Algo fam in general has. It goes a bit like, we've been operational for 3 years and we haven't had any downtime. Now, how do you define downtime on something that takes every X seconds? Is you could say that if we were offline for only a minute, then it's fine. So when Algorand began, the time between blocks was about 25 seconds, and right now it's about 4.4 or 4.5, on average, right? This is not a guarantee. It's just how long it usually takes for consensus to work and for a new block to be agreed upon. And so we took a look at every single block's timestamp from block zero to block like 21 million and change. And we found that the maximum time between two blocks since 3 years and a bit ago is actually 26 seconds. And that is crazy. It is just crazy. It is so reliable. And it's just a combination of the fundamentals being really solid, okay, but that doesn't, translate into market traction necessarily, right? The markets will not follow technicals. They will follow the user experience, and mostly they will follow the money. Yeah, but the reliability and the speed of it is amazing. You forget that like an entire global like consensus system is working to process your transactions. If I sent an Algify like a redeem claim or something, and it takes more than a few seconds, I squint at my screen like, what's going on? What's taking so long? And then I remember, all right, so if this were over Bitcoin, it would take at best 10 minutes to get into a block. And then maybe another hour for enough confirmations that we're not going to fork the other way and it's going to get invalidated.
Yeah, no, yeah, when you put it into perspective like that, you know, the max time between a block is 26 seconds, and you compare that to, you know, a lot of the other protocols out there, you're like, this is crazy. And you know, 26 seconds is if that's, you know, the max, right? I'm guessing the average is just slowly gonna approach, you know, 4.4, 4.5, and you know, perhaps even lower as the Algorand, you know, consensus develops over time. And the fact that it's been going for, you know, over 3 years without any, you know, major slowdown or anything is just crazy to think about. This is maybe a slightly different question, but in terms of, I guess, Algorand's adoption, right? At which point do you think, we'll see a lot of adoption happening from EVM compatible chains, right? So, a big a you can call it a downside or perhaps a feature of AVM is that it's not Ethereum virtual machine compatible. So, a lot of the smart contracts have to be quite heavily rewritten into Teal or one of the supported languages. Do you have any idea, when people will actually see this change and begin to move over?
Right. I don't think AVM itself is working to become EVM compatible, and in my humble opinion, it shouldn't. As I'm more or less an algo maxi, so I believe that AVM is far superior to EVM. Having native representations of other tokens in the form of Algorand standard assets. Yes, you could try to figure out a way to translate ERC20 tokens into ASAs. But it's just not going to be as good. I believe there is a company working on a side chain which is going to feature EVM compatibility. So that's going to be one thing that will drive some people who already have either Solidity experience already, so that they can develop EVM applications, or they could borrow something from a fairly large open source collection of EVM dApps that already exist. So that's somewhat good. Personally, I think EVM is not being EVM compatible is both a blessing and a curse. But in fact, I believe a far more impactful driver to adoption is going to be bridges. So at the moment, Algorand is fairly isolated from other chains. And this is changing fairly rapidly. For anyone who hasn't actually been involved in the Algorand space and is listening, so yes, it's been mainnet has been operational for a bit more than 3 years now, but really in the past year is where we've seen everything happen. So when we started looking into this in December, I believe the only DEX like the only DeFi thing you could do on Algorand was Yieldly, right? I don't think Tinyman had launched yet, and in since then, the number of projects that have launched mainnet, it's just staggering. It really gives us it really reaffirms our belief that we're not wasting our time on this chain, and that this is actually going to go anywhere. And this is without even looking at the various partnerships and announcements that the foundation has made, like FIFA. And so much more stuff. If FIFA actually works with Algorand as their official blockchain provider, and we see things like NFT tickets or NFTs in gaming, that's just gonna effectively make it a household name. But circling back to bridging, it is a problem that you cannot transfer tokens easily between chains. So a couple of things have happened that are going to fix this. And one is Portal or Wormhole Bridge has actually in testnet, it supports Algorand already. And version 2.0, when that launches into mainnet, you will be able to transfer tokens to and from Algo to like something like 10 plus other chains. That is a centralized bridge, so you're depositing into some smart contracts that are owned by a company, and then the smart contract on the other chain is going to send the funds to your wallet. But what's even more exciting is that there are grants given out to companies developing bridges to Bitcoin and Ethereum. And the big thing that we obviously have to touch upon when we're talking about bridging in Algorand is Algorand state proofs. Which is a technology that was just presented to MIT by the Algorand head of cryptography, if I'm not mistaken. I was just seeing this today on Twitter. And it's effectively a way to prove ownership of tokens cross-bridge trustlessly. So that's probably going to effectively herald a new era of trustless DeFi bridging. Yeah, so once tokens are able to move freely between chains and you don't have to, deposit into a centralized exchange like Bitfinex in order to get your USDT to and from, and especially USDC, which is the number one US dollar stablecoin that's being used on Algorand right now, that's pretty much only accepted on one or two exchanges at the moment. So freely flowing algo and stablecoin representations between chains, I believe, is going to make, at least as far as DeFi is concerned, far bigger impact than EVM compatibility. But it's different things, so it remains to be seen, I guess.
Yeah, no, that sounds really interesting. I think there's one project I think called Glitter Finance, who are working on bridging, or a DeFi, an integrated DeFi ecosystem across chains, and they're working on Algorand and they're working on Solana already. So
Yeah.
something like that is something that would probably drive adoption a lot more, right? So if people from Solana, perhaps come over to Algorand because it's perhaps cheaper or it's faster, or they find some other reasons. And I think we've seen, certain things happen that drive Algorand's adoption, right? So with after the collapse of Luna, we saw I believe a number of NFT projects actually move over to
That
Algorand.
was great.
And
That was such a speedy response by the foundation. I could barely believe it. They were announcing that they have like a utility to move over their NFTs into Algorand like by the next day or 2 days later. That was some really good like positioning and throwing your developer time and money and power into like responding into something so quickly. And I believe Poppin' Puffins is one of the NFT projects that was fairly popular on Luna, that's already over on Algorand. So yeah, we're not always applauding the foundation, whatever it does. That's not really our style. But when they did that, we were like, damn, that's good. Well done, guys.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the community actually stepped up to help, right? A lot of the community reached out to individual projects and did what they could to help them understand how they can help bridge their assets over, or rather create new assets on Algorand to help keep their communities intact, right? Because the last thing you want is if your chain collapses is for your project leader, so the people behind the NFTs, to just up and go. But what the Algorand community did was support these creators to not only keep the communities intact, but to move them over to a new chain which is still functioning and running. And that
Yeah.
was very much a individual effort by many individuals. And I think that kind of goes to show again like the power of the Algo fam, which is something I talk a lot about, right? Like everyone within the Algorand community is just so supportive of everyone. You ask for some help and you get it. There's no questions asked. And I think that's probably one of our like biggest strengths, especially as new projects come around to Algorand, right? Having the capacity to support them all is gonna help adoption so much.
Right. And the patience that we mostly have, from what I've seen, to keep answering the same questions again and again on Reddit when a newbie comes and they don't bother looking. And the number one question is, why did I stop receiving passive rewards? You don't see anyone getting told to just RTFM or anything. There's every time it's like, yeah, that's being phased out. You now have to participate in governance and your alternatives are maybe lending it out on Algo-Fi and blah blah blah. No worries, buddy. Yeah. Until 10 minutes later when someone else asks the exact same question. It's the community is really important. And having a good name and it's like patient elders in the community. Responding and being supportive is it can make or break a chain.
Yeah, no, definitely. Since I guess since we're kind of on the or we were on the topic of the technology, you talked about state proofs already, which is a verifiable and trustless way of proving someone owns assets, which is very useful for bridges. There's a few other key Algorand technology that we can probably talk about, and the first one is rekeying. So for people who aren't too familiar with it, do you want to go into it a bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. So rekeying is one of my favorite features of the Algorand blockchain. And I don't think that I've seen it on any other chain. And I did look to see if anything like this exists elsewhere. If it does, I'd be really interested to know. But so normally I'm going to do a really, really brief intro into public key cryptography and what your address actually means and how it works. So when you first generate a wallet, let's say on Pera, you get so 25 words that is referred to as your seed phrase, and that is used to generate a private key and then a public key. The public key is encoded into the addresses that we all know and love, and the private key is meant to stay secret and private, and it should only be used by yourself because it actually is used to authorize spending from the public. The chain uses it to authorize transfers from your account to other accounts. So on Algorand, there's this unique feature called rekeying, where you can basically tell the network that from now on, for this address, forget the private keys that were used to generate it. From now on, this new address, address B, that is the spending authority for it. And so you can invalidate your previously, active private keys and use just delegate signing authority, especially spending authority, let's say, to another address. This is really, really powerful and useful. And it right now it hasn't really been exposed to end users so much. I believe the MyAlgo wallet surprisingly does not support either signing rekeying transactions or working with rekeyed accounts, but Pera wallet does. However, from a user point of view, the only way you can initiate a rekeying from Pera wallet is if you have a ledger. If you start just a normal account on Pera wallet and then you later buy a ledger, you can actually rekey your existing account to your ledger account so that you don't change anything else. You don't move over your funds to the ledger account, but you're instructing the network that from now on, rather than the 25 words that were used to generate the private key that would sign transactions for this account, instead, whatever is controlling the ledger address is now responsible to sign my transactions. And we have this is actually one of the projects that we are working on, which is like a general purpose rekeying tool. And we think this is actually the only response that makes sense if you think that your private key, your seed phrase has been leaked, right? We've seen a few people do it on with like command line tools and such. There was an NFT group on Twitter the other day, I forget which one, but their front-end designer developer had included the seed phrase of the creator wallet on their site, which not ideal obviously, and someone found it and they stole a few NFTs and then they also stole something like 80 algo out of the account. But then they obviously spoke to someone who knew a lot more about what's going on rather than the guy who effectively publicized their seed phrase, and they somehow stumbled upon rekeying. And so they then rekeyed that creator account and they effectively saved their creator account, and the scammer who has the seed phrase for that account now cannot use it on mainnet anymore. So to me, it's a really good response to basically saving your bacon when you've done the unthinkable and given away your seed phrase. You can like save your account.
Yeah, no, I think I was around when that happened. I think it was last weekend. Yeah, I think a few NFT projects were actually hit, and then within a few hours there was news that their accounts have been rekeyed, and at that time I wasn't too familiar, what rekeying actually was. But then after looking into it, I'm like, it makes sense now, and it probably just makes a lot of things easier, right? It's a big quality of life if you can just rekey your wallet. Because that way you don't need to, send everyone your new wallet address. You can keep your old wallet address. You're just, the the authorization is given via a different key effectively, right?
Exactly. And that's why I like it so much about like a response to suspecting that your seed phrase has been leaked. I mean, if you didn't have rekeying, then you could still, opt out of every single smart contract that you have and cache all of like the algo that you have lent out on AlgoFi or anything, and then send it to a new account. And any NFTs or ASAs you have, you'd then have to opt into the new to from the new account and then send it over from the old account. It could take you well over an hour to get everything transferred over, right? Whereas a rekeying, if you know what you're doing, and there's a handy tool like the one we're making, you could just do it in under like 2 minutes, and you're done. Like the previous seed phrase is useless, and your account is now safe again.
Yeah, no, I think that's really awesome. I guess the other thing that we can probably talk about a little bit is smart signatures, which you seemed quite passionate about. So I'll probably let you go ahead and take that one away as well.
Right, so this is great as well. All right, I'm gonna start. I don't hate Ethereum, by the way, just so everyone's on board with that. I keep comparing it to Ethereum, and obviously you're gonna compare yourself to the smart contract and DeFi King, right? So Bitcoin doesn't do much of that, if anything. And so obviously you're gonna compare yourself to the King right now. So on the King's chain, Ethereum, the way that authorizing a smart contract to spend on your behalf, as far as I know, at least everything comes with asterisk, is you give a dApp essentially spending power over a particular token from your wallet, and that's it. If I want to open like a limit order on 1 inch, like a DEX that supports multiple chains, including Ethereum, and they also have limit orders. That's when you say, I want to convert my ETH to ST ETH at that precise price point. So when it gets hit, that's when it executes. In order to facilitate that, you have to grant essentially spending power for your ETH to 1 inch, and then there's no restrictions. They can take as much as they want. They can send it to whoever they want. They can just take ST ETH from your wallet. Smart signatures are a way to give this a similar kind of authorization on Algorand, but it's a lot more granular. A smart signature is effectively a smart contract that will decide if the user signing, authorizing the smart signature, is able to, if the transaction is valid or not. I'm not explaining this terribly well, but a smart signature is effectively an authorization that a user approves to spend some of his money in a very particular way. So something that we have dabbled into is as an idea for a project is a liquidation notification service. So on AlgoFi, when you're about to get liquidated, when your borrow utilization gets too high and you could be liquidated, we send you a notification. And a while later, we realized we could actually make this into a prevention service. So if there's like usually one or two things that a user does with their borrows on AlgoFi, let's say they deposit them into the STBL USDC stability pool, which at the moment can give up to like 19% APR, we could offer a smart signature to the user that lets us do like exactly three things, because those are the only three things that we should be able to do on their behalf in order to prevent a liquidation from happening. So from someone who is on the USDC STBL pool, we'd be able to do transaction type number one, withdraw the tokens from the farm, transaction type number two, turn them back into STBL and USDC, and number three, repay the loan. That's it. That's all we would be able to do if a user signed an appropriately coded smart signature, and we wouldn't be able to steal their NFTs or take any algo or transfer it to ourselves or anything else. So it's a way to authorize in a lot more granular fashion what you want this dApp to do with your funds on your behalf. Sadly, there's a big problem with smart signatures, which is aside from the fact that they're not really supported by Pera, for instance. The problem here is how can a user know what they are signing, right? Because smart contracts are written in an assembly-like language called TEAL, which is very, very low level, and it's quite hard to know what is going on and what you're signing. So smart signatures sort of need to be vetted by the community before they can be trusted by end users. And therein lies another problem, which is, how do you know that this smart signature that you're signing is the smart signature that was vetted by the community? So one of the ideas that we have that we eventually want to formulate into an ARC proposal is that smart contract calls and smart signatures and some like groups of transactions like you do on AlgoFi land, I think it's a really good idea if we as a community and developers develop a system where you look at a group of transactions or a single transaction call to a smart contract, you exclude all of the mutable fields that might differ between different calls, like the specific amounts. And then you generate like a signature, again, signatures, but yes, a signature that represents, uniquely represents this type of transaction or contract or smart signature. And then we, when we vet these, they become kind of known and trusted, right? Much like specific ASAs are verified, we would then, every time you do an AlgoFi lend deposit for USDC, it should have the same signature, no matter what the amount is that you are depositing into it. And so the Para wallet could then display a little check if you are doing this kind of transaction, and it says, AlgoFi lend USDC validated. So the user doesn't really have to dig into what all of these 20 transactions are in the group. And they would just be able to trust that, okay, this is a legit interaction that I'm making. Something similar could happen with smart signatures, where if a smart signature has been validated to be trustworthy by community developers or a third-party company or whatever, that signature would then be put into some database, Algo Explorer or whatever. And in a similar fashion, where ASAs are verified, then if we as the D13 collective develop this liquidation prevention service and we're offering this smart signature to users to sign, so that's a really dangerous step, because it could just be a smart signature that just approves anything, right? Mm-hmm. And we'd be able to take their money at any point, send it to anyone, anywhere, and that would be a problem. But if at that point the Para wallet could look at the signature of this smart signature that we are signing, that we're offering to sign, and looks it up somewhere and sees that it's been verified, validated, and vetted, they could offer a check and maybe a link for more information about what actually is it that I am signing. So there's a huge user experience hurdle with using smart signatures, especially safely, but I believe it is surmountable, and it is a lot better than just a blanket, approval to just spend all my algo, Mrs. AlgoFi or whoever, I don't care. That was a long rant.
it's not the most straightforward, but I think I understand the premise. I think, we'll probably see almost like how you have smart contract audits, right? You'd have smart signature audits happening, right? And then, once these audits take place, this would be publicized, on the said company's website. So people can go on the website and see, okay, smart signature that has, the signature, whatever, is meant to do this. Oh, this matches up with what's on my phone. I can trust it.
That's exactly right. There's always the centralized aspect of all of this, right? Yeah. When you visit app.algofi.org, you're not talking to the chain, you're talking to an actual server that is serving up the HTML and the JavaScript, and that will eventually send the transaction for you to sign. That can get hacked, right? That's not magically protected by some blockchain fairy. Yeah. So if tomorrow the AlgoFi, God forbid, the AlgoFi front-end servers get hacked, the smart signatures that they are not using right now, but they are in this hypothetical, that they offer to users could be, changed. And right now, not only does Para not support them, but we don't have a good way of, offering any kind of trust as to what it is you're signing when you sign smart signature. I believe only MyAlgo supports them at the moment. Mm-hmm.
It will be good to see how this develops going forward. While we're still on the topic of AlgoFi, there's an interesting piece that you guys did regarding AlgoFi liquidations, and you wrote up a report about it. Do you kind of want to go through what your thought process behind that was and what you did?
Yeah, absolutely. As a preamble to this, there's this point for developers where it usually comes way after they know like the theory and the fundamentals of blockchain. There's this point where we go, right, so all of this stuff is public on chain. So I can actually look at it myself, right? And one of these light bulb moments for us was with AlgoFi and especially their liquidations. As a brief intro, when you take out a loan on AlgoFi, your collateral value is translated into its US dollar value equivalent, and you can borrow up to a certain percentage of that. It's not actually 90%, as it says on the site, because different coins have different collateral utilization. So if you deposited 1,000 algo, you can borrow against 700 of that, and then you can borrow 90% of that 70% of your full algo value. Now, the problem is if you borrow, say, something that is of stable value, like a USDC stablecoin, your borrow utilization has to stay under 100%. If it goes over 100%, you effectively have a bad loan where the value of the loan that you have is higher than the collateral that you have against that loan. In order to protect the platform and the STBL stablecoin, the AlgoFi platform offers essentially liquidation as an option of an action that can be taken on the platform. This is usually done by bots. And anytime an account is found to have utilization over 100%, it can be liquidated by any other user with, scripting knowledge, I guess. And the way that works is that up to 50% of your collateral can be repaid by the liquidator, and they get your assets at a 7% discount. So this was really interesting to us, and AlgoFi didn't really launch that long ago. I'm looking at the article right now, and we seem to be talking about December 2021, so that's probably when AlgoFi went on mainnet. So yeah, we used an indexer and a blockchain crawler, and we ran through the data twice, and we looked at every single liquidation that had happened from AlgoFi Genesis, which was apparently block 18 million and something, December 15. And we found 2,300 liquidations, and yeah, basically looked at what's going on in that space, because there hasn't been very much information as to what is happening. It was quite interesting stuff. We did an article that's on our website. It just so happened that I was Googling about AlgoFi liquidations the other day, and our website came as the number two hit on both DuckDuckGo and Google, and that really threw me. I have no idea what I was actually looking at. I was just grinning at that. Yeah, and so we not only wrote up some statistics about like who the top liquidator is and the most liquidated account and so on in like an easy to digest blog post, we also put up a spreadsheet with all of those liquidations if anyone wanted to play with it. And this actually led we kind of became interested in getting more value out of blockchain data and exposing it to users. So first of all, a really interesting bit of kit that we have written for ourselves is called the Algo D Load B, which is a load balancer that you can put in front of Algo D daemons. Those are the that's the software that you use to talk to the Algorand blockchain, either to read what transactions were in a particular block or to broadcast a transaction. And in our effort to get to high availability, that's when you're online and processing almost all the time, we actually realized that there is no open source or anything for something like this, effectively, you don't want to rely on a single algo D, because that's it's especially if it's an archival one, meaning that they have every single block from zero up to 20, 21 million where we are right now. They can actually go down or lag behind. And if you're offering something that is critical to be up to date all the time, you actually need something like this. And so we wrote what it is, what it sounds like, and a load balancer that you can talk to instead of an algo D, and it's backed by multiple different algo Ds instead of a single one. And there have been instances since we actually deployed this in our systems where our main, if we're going to be talking to one algo D, it would have been that one, which is on a dedicated server. It's usually, fairly sturdy and reliable and so on. But in fact, on two or three different occasions, it had actually been lagging behind. In one occasion, it was lagging behind by over 200 blocks. That was a case of an errant SQL query completely thrashing the disk for multiple hours. And so Algo D wasn't able to do disk IO fast enough to do its job. And in that case, our systems that were talking to Algo through Algo D load B were actually able to keep crunching data despite our primary Algo D having fallen behind. And so we see this as really, first of all, quite interesting, fairly easy to code as well. And we've been using it to code something else, which is kind of crucial if you want to do something like a liquidation notification service, or if you want to build an arbitrage bot, or if you want to do anything that is critical that it always has the latest block as soon as possible so that it can take an action, right? And one of the things that we are probably a few weeks or a few short months from releasing publicly that we intend to do is the Algorand Observer, which is going to live at algorand.observer that we hoarded back in December when even some algorand.tlds were available for the on the cheap. And so this is going to be like a real-time observer on the Algorand blockchain that's going to be looking at some interesting events like an NFT creation or a DEX swap. And currently the version in development supports TinyMan, AlgoFi, and PactFi. And there's something too, like watching DEX swaps happen in real time. It's really quite fascinating that all of this stuff is just accessible. What was the question?
Oh, I can't even remember. Yeah, no, so it was initially it was about the AlgoFi liquidation reports. But yeah, no, there's I guess it leads on very well, right? If some nodes are unavailable, you need this load balancer to, help support you. And then, I guess this it just kind of builds on the fact that it's open information, right? The blockchain is public, anyone can read it. And the Algorand Observer, you can witness these DEX swaps happening in real time. I'm pretty sure you can get direct insights into the ratios of tokens inside pools. So like you said, for like arbitrage opportunities, I'm sure people will be writing scripts and probably already have, to arbitrage profits from, fluctuations.
Between DEX, we're actually looking at that and kind of salivating a little bit. There's definitely arbitrage bots working. As far as bots go, that's actually a really good use of them because you don't want to buy something on you don't want to buy Yieldly on Tinyman only to realize, oh wow, it's actually twice as expensive as it was on PactFi. So I do believe it's actually offering a service by kind of flattening the prices across the different decks. And while developing the different kind of adapters that recognize and parse a PactFi versus a Tinyman transaction, one of the places that it kind of choked were these groups of transactions that were like six at a time. And we had to pay special attention to make sure that within that group of six transactions, which is actually three swaps in a row, to make sure that we're matching the correct swap out of that group. But yeah, there's definitely our bots running right now on the chain. and with a handsome profit, I'd say. It's definitely something that we're going to look into implementing ourselves. But for the time being, I think it's going to be a lot more interesting to see if we can make something like the Algorand Observer, but make it really high availability, make like go for like six nines or something. That's 99.9999%. And we're almost ready to do this. And we're going to be testing it Netflix style, where I believe they have a service that's called something like Chaos Monkey, that just shoots a virtual server in production as it goes to make sure that the system will keep functioning. So we're going to be doing tests like that, like take down an entire server hosting multiple components of this system in order to see if it's functioning as intended. And then it's going to be a public test for ourselves to prove that we can actually do this really reliably. And having this data already, like not with six nines availability, we want to see if anyone in the space would be interested in having effectively using this data, like having a webhook that we call when the algo USD price is lower than X or higher than Y, or if there's, you know, some kind of arbitrage or liquidation opportunity. Yeah, so that's going to be the first attempt at monetizing something. First we're gonna just offer something to the general public, which is going to be mostly, you know, nice to see and a curiosity and so on. And then when we can prove to both ourselves and the community that we can run this really reliably, we're going to see if anyone is interested in, you know, having API access to it and webhooks and callbacks and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, I think having the information available for someone to you know pick up, even as a paid service is quite useful, right? Because it there's a lot of work that goes into actually reading this data as it comes in a live fashion. So you know if someone is able to abstract slightly away from that and make it easier to access this information, there's definitely a lot of value in there which you can extract, right? You know you can probably see mass sell-offs of certain tokens between DEXs. You know you can probably help you build like price charts as well of different tokens across the DEXs, right? So to kind of aggregate the price to figure out what the average price of said token is across all of these exchanges.
That is exactly right. That is exactly right. And it's one of the things that we realized like last week that did we accidentally build Tiny Chart? And yes, we accidentally built Tiny Chart. And you know, if you have all of the swaps happening across all of the DEXs on Algorand in real time, then not very much is missing from actually offering something like Tiny Chart as well. You're missing aggregations per minute or per 15 minutes or whatever, and then charting library in your front end. So this is not going to be there at launch, but it's definitely something that we're going to be looking into, just as a way of visualizing this data.
Yeah. So I think we'll probably wrap it up there. Honestly, it's been amazing talking to you. You have just so much knowledge on a lot of things, right? So and all the super technical bits that most people probably have never seen or probably overlook. And it's fascinating how much information there actually is on the blockchain and how much, you know, analysis you guys have done on all of this data that's available, right? So I guess on my end it's I just want to say thank you to you for sitting down and chatting with me. And a shout out to your team for doing this work. It's really interesting to see what you're doing and reading all of your articles. I'll probably take this opportunity to let you plug any of your social media pages.
So first of all, thank you very, very much for having me. Being on a podcast was actually literally on my bucket list, so that one off. So that's great. I hope that this conversation was interesting to you and your readers. I definitely hope that I didn't get any of the technical stuff wrong. That's going to be a nightmare. And yeah, so we're on Twitter at B13 underscore CO, I believe. Yeah, that's pretty much it. We're also semi-active on Reddit. If you find us, there's the rb13 subreddit, though that's fairly empty at the moment because we don't really have anything to discuss about our projects as we haven't really launched anything noteworthy yet.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I'm sure we'll start to see more from you guys as time goes on. But yeah, just to wrap it up, yeah, thank you everyone for listening. I'll include all of D13's links below. Big thank you to Bit for speaking with me. If anyone does want to reach out to either me or Bit or D13 as a collective, feel free to do so. I'm sure no one will mind. But yeah, thank you for listening and goodbye.
Thanks very much. Bye.